Hey, Bankless Nation, welcome to the Meet the Nation. Today, we are exploring Hop Protocol with CEO and founder Chris Winfrey. Hop Protocol is a cross L2, cross-chain liquidity protocol, allowing you to hop from one L2 to another L2 to another L2 without having to go through the bottlenecks of the L1. So the way that this works is that Hop has contracts on the L1. It also has contracts on all the L2s. And it also has these other Hop tokens that are accounting tools, and using all of these collections of technologies, as well as actual USDC or USDT or ETH liquidity on all the L2s, it allows users to hop around all the L2s without having to touch the L1. So we go into the details about how this works, the technical capabilities of the Hop protocol, what it's like for a user. We ask the question, what can Hop go from L1 to L1? Can it also go from L2 of an L1 to a different L2 of a different L1? And then we also ask about the organization of Hop protocol, how it came to be, what its future roadmaps are. And so overall, a pretty, I think, thorough, in-depth, and efficient conversation of Hop protocol. So I hope you guys enjoy this conversation and learn all about Hop Protocol. There's links in the show notes with linking to their Discord and Telegram, or if they have one, and Twitter. So if you want to join the Hop community, you can go ahead and click those links there. So let's go ahead and get right into it. But first, a moment to talk about some of these fantastic sponsors that make the show possible. Arbitrum is an Ethereum scaling solution that's going to completely change how we use DeFi and NFTs. And now it's live and has over 100 projects deployed. Gas fees on Ethereum L1 suck. Too many people want to use Ethereum, and it doesn't have enough capacity for all of us. And that's why teams like Arbitrum have been hard at work developing layer 2 solutions that makes transactions on Ethereum cheap and instant. Arbitrum increases Ethereum's throughput by orders of magnitude at a fraction of the cost of what we are used to paying. When interacting with Arbitrum, you can get the performance of a centralized exchange while tapping into Ethereum's level of security and decentralization. This is why people are calling this Ethereum's broadband moment, where we get to add performance onto decentralization and security. If you're a developer and you want to save on gas costs and overall make a better user experience, go to developers.offchainlabs.com to get started building on Arbitrum. And if you're a user, keep an eye out for your favorite DeFi apps being built on Arbitrum. Many DeFi applications on the Ethereum L1 are migrating over to layer 2s like Arbitrum, and some are even skipping over the layer 1s entirely and deploying directly on layer 2. There's so many apps coming online to Arbitrum, so go to bridge.arbitrum.io now and start bridging over your ETH or any of the tokens listed, and start having the DeFi or NFT experience that you've always wanted.
Living a bankless life requires taking control over your own private keys. Not your keys, not your crypto. That's why so many in the Bankless Nation already have their Ledger hardware wallet, which makes proper private key management a breeze. But the Ledger ecosystem is much more than just a secure hardware wallet. Ledger is the combination of the Ledger hardware wallet and the Ledger Live app. And if you're used to seeing all of your crypto services and favorite DeFi apps all in one spot, Ledger Live is where you want to be. Not only does Ledger let you buy your crypto assets straight from the app, but it also hooks into all of the DeFi apps and services that you're used to. Using Ledger Live, you can stake your ETH in Lido, swap on DEXs like Paraswap, or display your NFTs with Rainbow. You can also use Wallet Connect inside of Ledger Live to connect to all the other DeFi apps that keep coming online. DeFi never stops growing, and the Ledger Live app grows alongside with it. So click the link in the show notes to see all of the DeFi apps that Ledger Live has, and stay tuned as more apps come online. And if you don't have a Ledger hardware wallet, what are you even waiting for? Go to ledger.com, grab a Ledger, download Ledger Live, and get all of your DeFi apps all in one space.
Hey, Bankless Nation. Today, we are here with Chris Winfrey, the co-founder and CEO of Hop Protocol, which is one of the emerging inter-L2, inter-chain liquidity protocols that allow you to hop from one chain to another chain without having to go through some of the frictions of actually using the codified gateway between these two things. So Chris, welcome to the Meet the Nation.
Hey, David. Really excited to be on the show.
So let's start at the very, very beginning. Where did Hop Protocol come about, and what was kind of the initial inception idea?
Yeah, so our team was originally working on a contract-based account called Authereum. And so we started that about a couple years ago and kind of saw an opportunity to really streamline the UX on Ethereum. And we felt like we made a bunch of good improvements. But ultimately, when we started, it cost about 30 cents to deploy this contract-based account for users. And by the time DeFi took off and really drove those gas prices up, then it was over $200. And so we had to push this cost over to users. And then just for them to get started, it had this just huge barrier of entry. So we started looking for ways to kind of get our users onto layer two and started connecting Ethereum with different layer twos, but we were still seeing that users like weren't really saving gas. They were kind of moving to layer two, making a few transactions, and then coming back to layer one. And just those bridge costs were more than if they just used something like Uniswap on layer one. So we realized like, okay, if Ethereum has a future, we really need our users to get onto layer two and to stay on layer two and just to be layer two native citizens. They never touch layer one where they would have to deploy this contract-based account. And so we started kind of iterating on different ideas, put out a white paper and a demo of Hop Protocol and ETH research. And that started to get some traction. At the time, Vitalik was starting to talk about, a roll-up centric roadmap for Ethereum. And we kind of realized that, okay, maybe this has the opportunity to be core Ethereum infrastructure where we need a way to kind of connect these different roll-ups and layer twos. And just decided to go all in and focus on Hop Protocol.
So one of the design philosophies that I think you articulated is that it's great if Ethereum has all of these layer twos and you can do all these things on the layer twos. But if we have all these layer twos, then we would imagine people would be going between all these layer twos and going back to the layer one to go to a different layer two kind of almost defeats the purpose of having a layer two at all, right? If you still have to funnel through the choke point of high gas fees, low block space environment of the layer one. So the idea of Hop is just increasing the experience of exactly what you said, which I really enjoyed, which was being a layer two citizen. And so if you can just hop around all the layer twos, you actually completely remove that constraint of the high gas fees bottleneck that everyone has to go through by touching the Ethereum L1. Anything you want to add to that?
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Okay. So let's see where how does it actually work on a technical level? What does it mean to hop from one layer to another? Maybe we can start with like, what does it feel like from the user perspective? What's that feel like? And then technically, how does that operate on the back end?
Sure. So from a user perspective, we just exposed this very, it's a Uniswap like interface. It feels like you're using a cross layer or cross chain AMM, where you can just kind of deposit assets in one end, and then after some time, you'll get assets at the other end. So you can transfer assets in about the time it takes for the source chain to reach finality, which is about 5 to 10 minutes.
The source chain, that is the chain that you are leaving, or is that the chain that you are going towards?
The chain that you're leaving.
Okay.
So that's basically the user experience and something that we've been very careful to, not introduce a second transaction and just make that try to abstract kind of this underlying technology from the user and make it as smooth as possible.
So when you say it's like a Uniswap style interface, when I go to Uniswap, I have two tokens that I select. I have, I have Ether and I want USDC. Actually, it's almost always the inverse. I have USDC and I want Ether. If for you guys, is it I am on Arbitrum and I want to be on Optimism? So we just swap out the tokens and instead replace it with destinations?
Yeah, that's exactly right. You'll select an asset and then a network that you're coming from and then a network that you're going to.
Okay. And then can you also swap exchange tokens in the meantime, or is that just a completely different feature?
Not right now, but it's definitely something that we're talking about addressing in the future.
Okay. All right. So very cool. So I have a bunch of USDC or Ether on one L2, and then I want it to go to a different L2. How is this actually facilitated on a technical level?
Sure. So there's a few layers to Hop. And so the very, very core layer is basically this way to scalably send messages from one roll up to the next. And so the way this works is each scaling solution already has a message bridge with layer one Ethereum. So this basically allows contracts on Ethereum to call contracts on layer two and contracts on layer two to call contracts on Ethereum.
When you say a message bridge, that is just like the bridge, right? Like when I say, when I want to get my money from L1 to Arbitrum or L1 to Optimism, I use the bridge. Is this that's the same bridge as the message bridge, or is that a different piece of infrastructure?
So we call that the native token bridge, and the native token bridges are also built on top of this core message bridge. Okay. And so if you imagine the message bridge allows contracts to call each other, then what the native bridge is going to do is it's going to allow you to lock up USDC on layer one, and then that's going to send a message to mint USDC for you on layer two. And then on the inverse, if you burn USDC on layer two, then it will send a message down to layer one to release that USDC on layer one. Mm-hmm. The caveat is that for optimistic rollups, the message from layer two to layer one takes a full week for it to be executed on layer one. And this allows time for the challenge game to play out in order to make sure everything's secure. And then with ZK rollups, the message can only propagate as fast as that ZK rollup checkpoints. And so a ZK rollup checkpoint is pretty expensive. So sometimes it will happen every half an hour. Sometimes it'll happen every 6 hours, depending on how scaled up that rollup is. But you know, even exiting a ZK rollup can still be slow depending on the scale.
Okay. And that's an important point to drive home. Like even in our fastest rollups that we have, ZK rollups, it's still a 30-minute wait time. Which, I mean, I get frustrated when I have to wait 5 minutes for my transactions to clear on Ethereum. So like from a user UX experience, like 30 minutes is going to be even more frustrating. Even if they get used to it, like we can still iterate on this. And again, that's the fastest time to go from a layer two to a layer one. And so like with optimistic rollups, which are both Optimism and Arbitrum, it takes upwards of 7 days. And so if you want to use these bridge, I'm pretty sure, correct me if I'm wrong, but going from the L1 to Arbitrum or Optimism, it's more or less instantaneous, but getting back out takes 7 days for optimistic rollup. So there's a huge UX problem here, almost no matter what.
Exactly right, yeah. And so we have these message bridges that we can leverage. And so you can imagine if we want to talk from one rollup A to rollup B, then the naive approach would be, okay, send a message down to layer one and then send that message back up to layer two at the destination. And then we kind of have this communication link.
Right, where you bounce off the layer one to go off to a different destination. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so the problem with that is that this creates this huge bottleneck with layer one. So, you know, if we imagine that our layer two environments are way more scalable, we have lots and lots of messages. And if each of those messages needs to propagate one by one through layer one Ethereum, then it just creates this bottleneck. It's expensive and just doesn't really get us the scalability we want. Mm-hmm. So the core innovation behind Hop is that we will aggregate many messages on the source chain, the chain that you're leaving. And then we will periodically commit those. And so when we commit them, we aggregate all those messages into this really compact data structure. I'm sure you guys have talked about Merkle trees. You basically just have a single hash that represents all of this data. And then we can propagate that hash through layer one that represents thousands of messages onto the destination layer two. And then we can unpack it at the destination. And then that kind of creates this scalable roll-up to roll-up messaging protocol.
Okay, so that is like the settling up between two layers, right? And so mm-hmm. maybe there's just a bunch of USDC that flows from one L2 to another L2. That's not settled. A bunch of things happen. Maybe a bunch of things more happen. Maybe a bunch of things more happen. And like the analogy here is kind of like a bar tab. That everyone uses, and people usually typically use the bar tab analogy to talk about a payment channel, which I think Hop protocol might be, but we'll talk about that. And then, so what you're saying is like Hop protocol allows for a bunch of economic activity to happen, a lot of people going to the bar and asking for a drink without actually a transaction settling to Visa, the Visa network. But then periodically, you do settle up, and the assets do actually flow from like the Arbitrum contract on the layer one to the Optimism contract also on the layer one, and allows the actual rollups to settle up with each other based off of Hop's sort of like off-chain transaction ledger that it has. Is this all correct?
Yeah. We have a lot of similarities to payment channels and specifically that we make a bunch of payments and then we do this kind of batch settlement, but then like structurally it turns out a little different, but
that's where the similarities end.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
So how does Hop Protocol actually like account for the net of all of the assets that are transferred cross chain?
Mm-hmm. So that's kind of this next layer. And so Hop has this intermediary asset that we call H tokens. Mm-hmm. And so it depends on what asset's being bridged, but it could be like HUSDC, HETH. And so just
these,
like-
These just like Hop IOUs?
Exactly. Yeah. And actually, you know, you could think of basically every token on layer two as an IOU, because, right. you know, even with the native bridge, you're locking up an asset on layer one right. and minting something on layer two. And so basically this is Hop's version of that that lives alongside the native token version. We call that the canonical asset. So like right. canonical USDC, that's right. going to be the one that's used in Aave, Uniswap, et cetera. And so the reason we introduce our own intermediary asset, these H tokens, is because we need to build this special functionality into them that we can't build into the canonical assets. And so specifically, when you deposit into the layer one Hop bridge contract, you'll mint an H token. So if you deposit USDC, you'll mint the HUSDC on layer two. And that functions just the same as the native bridge. But the difference is that when you burn HUSDC or another H token on layer two, we have a role called the bonder that can mint HUSDC at another destination for you.
Because Hop Protocol needs, it needs its self-sovereignty. It needs its own ability to manage its own currency to account for the differences between the currencies across the different L2s, right?
Exactly right, yeah.
Okay, so I have USDC on Ethereum and I deposit it into Arbitrum and then I get USDC on Arbitrum. But like you said, that's actually an IOU. So it's actually Arbitrum USDC that is an IOU of USDC on the main Ethereum chain. And then when you mint Hop USDC, aren't you actually minting Arbitrum USDC, so it's HA USDC, because you are making an IOU for Arbitrum USDC, which is making an IOU for USDC on the main chain. Is that right?
Yeah, the naming gets a little confusing, but I would think of it as you know, the canonical USDC is kind of a IOU, a promise to be able to claim USDC from the native token bridge contract on layer one, whereas HUSDC is a promise to claim layer one USDC in the Hop bridge contract on layer one.
Okay. Hop bridge contract on layer one. Is the Hop bridge contract on layer one also part of the Arbitrum or Optimism contracts, or is that separate?
It's separate. And then it will also be connected to Arbitrum, Optimism, Polygon and XSTAC.
Okay. So it's like, rather than stacking on top, it's more in parallel.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay, cool.
And so that's kind of how the that's kind of how the H tokens exist. And then in terms of you know, transporting an H token from one role to the next, the user basically burns an H token, specifies the destination, and then we have a bonder. And so the bonder is able to fully verify these rollups, you know, in the time it takes for layer one finality. With rollups, you kind of have two finalities. You have kind of like off-chain finality, which you can determine pretty fast in 5 to 10 minutes, because you can actually, you know, look at the chain of transactions and compute the state and make sure that you're correct. But you can't do that on-chain because you can't run all those transactions. Otherwise, we wouldn't be scaling Ethereum. So that's why it takes a week for kind of on-chain finality. But the bonder, they're fully verifying things in real time. They see the event, H tokens were burned, HUSDC was burned. And then they have collateral locked up at the destination, and they'll use that collateral to mint HUSDC for the user at the destination. Mm-hmm. So now, you know, imagine they facilitate a bunch of these transfers. They've locked up a bunch of collateral, and they can't unlock that collateral until they receive proof that HUSDC was burned at the source, because we want to make sure that the Hop bridge contract remains fully collateralized. Mm-hmm. And so that's where the message bridge comes in, the Hop message bridge. So, you know, after many people have transferred, we aggregate those into our compact data structure. And then, you know, we propagate this, we call it a transfer route or a message route, you know, through layer one to the destination. Once that reaches the destination, then the bonder can settle up and their collateral is unlocked. So that's kind of how you can move an H token from one place to the next pretty immediately. And then the settlement process happens over time.
Okay. So like in my mind, the H tokens are like this shadow token, the shadow that like follows the actual real token, but it has the self-sovereignty that Hop Protocol needs in order to move like at the speed of light. And so the way that Hop Protocol allows for like this like near instantaneous transfer of asset to chain is that you guys actually have the actual assets on all of the chains. And so somebody on chain A can go to chain B because Hop Protocol actually has the USDC on both sides. And then the H tokens are that communication accounting tool that because Hop Protocol, the Hop Protocol contract on the L1, it can manipulate the destination of the tokens as it sees fit, unlike it, how that it's not true for USDC or Ether. And so it can manipulate the balances on all the other chains to account for the transferring of USDC or any other token across all of the chains. Is that right?
Yeah. And this is all done completely trustlessly. It's all fully collateralized. It basically completely relies on the security of Ethereum and the different scaling solutions that you're using.
Well, we like that word trustlessly. What happens if like all, for some reason, everyone is on Arbitrum and they want to go to a different L2. So I Arbitrum, I'm just using Arbitrum just because everyone is on layer 2A. And then all for some reason, there's an economic event that means everyone needs to go to a different layer 2B, and all of the liquidity flees out of layer 2A. Therefore everyone who's left on layer two is stuck because you guys, Hop Protocol has lost all of its available assets because everyone has used up all of like the bandwidth. How does Hop Protocol like redistribute to account for like different bandwidth requirements across all the layer twos?
So actually to take a step back. So we have this HUSDC, and this is kind of like the second layer, but the H tokens aren't what the users want. They are using these actual canonical tokens. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of like the third layer of Hop. So at the core, we have this message bridge, and then we have the second layer, this intermediary asset. And then at the third layer, we have AMMs. Mm-hmm. So we have an AMM between the canonical asset and the H token. And so when a user is bridging from Arbitrum to Optimism, they'll swap USDC to HUSDC. That HUSDC is burned, and then the bonder will mint HUSDC at the destination. And then that's automatically swapped out into USDC and ends up in the user's wallet. From a user perspective, it's just one transaction for the whole flow. And so these AMMs actually play an important role in terms of like balancing across the chains as well. If we see a huge flow from, say, Arbitrum to Optimism, then you know it will cause the USDC on Arbitrum to start trading at a discount, and then the USDC on Optimism to start trading at a premium. And this actually incentivizes folks to rebalance these chains through large settlement transactions through layer one. So they can kind of redistribute the assets across the chains and then profit off that based on the arbitrage opportunities that the AMMs present.
Right. Very clever. That definitely seemed like the right place for economic incentives. How are these AMMs constructed? Are they more like a curve where the actual shape of the AMM is differentiated, or is it more like Uniswap V3 where you can have concentrated liquidity?
So it's more like curve, a stable swap. They are like kind assets. You know, there shouldn't be any reason for, you know, USDC and HUSDC to diverge, because ultimately you can claim either one on layer one for layer one USDC. And same with, you know, ETH and HETH and all the other assets that we support. Right now we're using the stable swap construction.
Hey guys, I hope you're enjoying this conversation with Chris about Hop Protocol thus far. Coming up in the second half of the show, we go into more details about the technical details of the Hop Protocol, as well as the future roadmap, and also just a more casual conversation about what Chris thinks about the current state of DeFi and where we are overall going. And also talk about yield and how Hop can offer just a sustainable source of yield for all those stablecoin yield seekers out there. So more coming up in the second half of the show, but first a moment to talk about some of these fantastic sponsors that make the show possible.
Matcha, everyone's favorite DEX aggregator, has just launched an open beta for gasless trading. So if you're trading more than $5,000 in common ETH and wrapped Bitcoin pairs, then your gas fees on Matcha are free. And that's why you should be using Matcha. Matcha routes your orders across all the various DeFi exchanges on Ethereum, Polygon, Binance Smart Chain, and gives you the best possible price without any trading fees or unnecessary slippage. Matcha has smart order routing that splits your orders across multiple liquidity sources if Matcha sees that it gets you better pricing. Trading on Matcha is super easy because it pools the liquidity for me into a single and easy to use platform, and has even saved me multiple times from accidentally picking the wrong DEX to trade on and getting a bad price. Matcha also allows you to make limit orders on chain so you can set and forget your DeFi trades, and they will go through automatically while you're away. So when you're making a trade, head over to matcha.xyz/bankless, connect your wallet, and start getting some of the best prices and most liquidity when you trade your crypto assets. Alchemix is one of the coolest new DeFi apps on the scene. It introduces self-paying loans, allowing you to spend and save at the same time. Deposit the DAI stablecoin into the Alchemix vault in order to get an advance on the interest it generates. Borrow up to 50% of the total amount of your deposited DAI in the form of AL-USD stablecoin. Here's the craziest part. The loan pays itself back and you cannot be liquidated. Unlock your assets potential in the ultimate DeFi savings account. And brand new to Alchemix is the ETH vault, where you can deposit ETH into the application, borrow AL-ETH against your deposits, while having your advance gradually paid back over time. V2 is rapidly approaching, which will allow for even more collateral types, plus a variety of yield strategies to choose from. Harness the power of Alchemix at alchemix.fi. That's alchemix.fi. Follow Alchemix on Twitter at alchemixfi and join the Discord to keep up to date with Alchemix V2 and to get involved in governance.
Can Hop bridge non-EVM chains?
It can. Yes. And so we haven't supported them yet. It would just be a matter of re-implementing our layer two bridge contract for whatever the scaling solutions. But, you know, we do plan on supporting Starkware and ZK Sync and other ZK rollups. And then eventually we'd like to support like disjointed layer ones as well. But that's kind of a different problem set than what we're addressing right now.
Okay, so it seems to be that any rollup, EVM or not, that settles to Ethereum, that seems like a relatively surmountable obstacle because there's only one canonical Hop contract on one canonical Ethereum L1. That seems like a task that can be overcome. Getting from one L1 to a different L1 or an L2 on one L1 to a different L2 on a different L1. That seems like a taller task because now there has to be two different Hop contracts on two different L1s. Am I on something here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's okay. Exactly right.
Can you describe how that problem works?
Yeah, so it's a very different problem set. It's something that you know we wouldn't use the core technology behind Hop for this. We would kind of develop something new. And so this would probably involve some new validator set to basically attest that, okay, you know, H tokens were burned at the, you know, some disjointed layer one, and we can release the token on layer one Ethereum or on, or mint H tokens on an Ethereum L2. Mm-hmm. And so this validator set, you know, won't share the same security as Ethereum. It will be as secure as that validator set.
It'll be like a multi-sig validator set of sorts.
Yeah. But that's kind of, you know, the best that you can do.
Listeners will be reminded of our episode with Rune Christensen, who had a lot to say about security assumptions across layer ones using multi-sigs.
Yeah.
Who can provide liquidity in Hop right now? Is that like a closed environment? And then what's the long-term game plan for that?
So we think of there's two types of liquidity in HOP, and we call this passive liquidity and active liquidity. And so passive liquidity is basically liquidity in the AMMs. You just kind of set it. You have very low risk of impermanent loss, and you can just kind of earn trading fees and then maybe stake it if there's liquidity mining. And then we have active liquidity, and this is the bonder process. It's a lot more like running an ETH2 validator, where you kind of set up your server, you have some process that's constantly listening for events and making transactions. And so right now, the bridges are set up just one bonder per bridge. And so the worst a bonder can do is be offline. And when the bonder's offline, the transaction will still propagate as fast as the exit time of the source rollup. So the rollup that you're starting on. So you know, even though there's just like one party that's doing this right now, they're not taking custody of funds. They're not presenting additional risk. They can just be unavailable basically. And in the next version of HOP, we're going to support multiple bonders per an asset. And then after that, we're going to have a completely decentralized bonder network. And so what's really cool about when we get to that point where we have this decentralized bonder network or even multiple bonders is that it becomes a one of N trust model. And this is just for being available. You know, right now it's trustless in terms of custodianship. But then in terms of like, you know, is your asset going to move, you know, very, very fast, or is it going to kind of move at the slower pace? You know, that is still now one of one, but it's going to become one of N, which is, you know, you just need one honest bonder to for it to go through.
Very cool. Do you have any sort of like metrics that you've been able to discover over the last few weeks or so, or actually months now that HOP protocol has been alive for a while, about like the level of yield that liquidity providers are getting from this?
So it fluctuates a lot. We just launched our ETH bridge last week. You know, on like a daily basis, some people were making, you know, 15%+ on ETH.
Like 15% in a day?
No. Sorry.
Yearly compounded. Okay.
Yeah.
Yearly compounded. I was about to say, like, hey, hang on, just take all my ETH.
Yeah. But yeah, based on a very like short window. And sure. So I would expect that to be competed down. But so far, you know, the yields have been good. And yeah, you can also earn, you know, stablecoin yields. And again, there's very low risk of impermanent loss. So I don't think there's many opportunities to earn the kind of yields that HOP LPs are earning, at least for ETH.
Right. Extrapolating this out into what me and Anthony Sozano call the nexus of Ethereum, where there's many, many L2s and there's many, many economic actors hopping between all these L2s. This is going to be a kind of like Ethereum's like economic heat, where all the transferring around is causing a bunch of just like fees and yield to occur. Do you have any like long-term thoughts about how L2 transfers will impact yield in DeFi?
That's a good question. I think, you know, ultimately we'll just keep attracting capital. And I say we, I mean Ethereum, until, you know, yields start to make more sense for the risk that people are taking. And so right now yields are very high. Risk is very high. As you know, Ethereum becomes more mature and HOP becomes more mature and you know, Yearn becomes more mature. Like all these different yield producing protocols, I would expect yield to kind of settle into more in line with the traditional finance ecosystem.
Is Yearn something that can be a liquidity provider for HOP?
So we have talked about, so back to like active liquidity and passive liquidity. So with the one, passive liquidity is much cheaper than active liquidity. There's lower barriers to entry. You don't have to run the server process. And there's a lot of folks that are just mercenaries will throw yield, you know, it's very, very competitive. And ultimately with the passive liquidity, you need those pools, because if you don't have the actual asset for people to bridge into, then, you know, they can't bridge. There's no way to kind of eliminate that type of liquidity. But this bonder liquidity, it just is essentially collateral. And so right now the bonder uses the same asset that's being bridged. But ultimately, we could or we plan to move to a future where the bonder could kind of hold a basket of assets. Those could be yield bearing assets, or you know, they could be ETH, they could be, you know, whatever basket of assets that the bonder wants to hold. And they just use that as collateral while earning yield on it for bridging assets across HOP. And that's where I think we'll get some big improvements in capital efficiency.
Very cool. How are fees determined in HOP?
So right now the bonder sets a fee, and then the AMMs take a 0.04% fee, so 4 basis points. And then, you know, once we get to the multi-bonder model, then bonders will basically compete for lowest fees, and that will kind of drive them down to a minimum.
Do you kind of think that over the long term, over the many years, that fees will kind of just collapse to the absolute minimum while also speed between L2s kind of increases? Is that the outcome for this?
Yeah, HOP definitely scales up a lot better than it scales down. So you know, basically the larger amount of assets that we're transferring for each of these settlements through layer one, then the cheaper we can get fees. So right now we're at the bonder charges 0.18%, so 18 basis points. Mm-hmm. Pretty soon we're going to be, you know, we just scaled up the ETH liquidity. We're going to do the same with USDC. We're going to be able to drop that down to 9 basis points. And ultimately, I think we can get it to, you know, around 4 basis points or lower for the bonder fees.
Now, that seems to fit into the model of L2s that I've come to understand, where the more users and the more assets and the more economic activity that's happening on these L2s, the actual cheaper the fees actually are because they're amortized across all the users. And so not only is this true of the actual L2s themselves, but this is also true of HOP, as in the bridges between these L2s. Can you just riff on that for a second? Do you think like this L2 environment is just going to become faster, cheaper, stronger as more and more people just adopt it?
Absolutely. Like even for myself, you know, I've been using DeFi on layer one. I just rebalanced a bunch of positions, and I just realized, what am I doing on layer one? I'm just losing a huge part of my yield to transaction fees. Layer two is here today, and so. I really think that soon here it will be very much, much more rare, especially for users that aren't dealing with, you know, anyone who's not dealing with like hundreds of thousands of dollars is going to be on layer two and just stay on layer two because layer one is just too expensive.
It makes a ton of sense. Are there any significant differences between how HOP is constructed versus how Connext is constructed that are worth talking about?
Sure. So there's a few different bridge models. So we already talked about HOP. We developed this technology, and so right now we're kind of alone in this category. And then another category is hash time locks, and so this is kind of a game where you know, you have one party lock up assets on one chain with a secret. Mm-hmm. Another party locks up assets with a secret. And then someone reveals the secret on one chain, and then the other party can use that revealed secret to unlock on the other chain. And so hash time locks, they've been around for a long time. This is the same technology that underpins the Bitcoin Lightning Network. And they work well in some scenarios, and then there's some difficulties and you know, these difficulties are ultimately why we chose not to take this approach when we were looking at this problem with Ethereum. And so one is that, you know, you have to wait for two rounds of finality. So you can't move too fast when you're doing kind of the second prepare transaction. And then you can't move too fast when you're revealing the secret. Otherwise, you're at risk of a reorg. And then the other one is that whoever goes first in this game is kind of locking up their assets without any promise of the other party kind of locking up their assets. So if you have one party that has like reputation, then things work really well because, you know, they're reputable and you know that they're not going to kind of like, you know, take, you know, lock up your assets without fulfilling the game or something like that. But then it gets harder to like really decentralize that network because once things get competitive, then you have to like layer in some kind of reputation layer to make sure that, you know, you don't have parties entering and then just locking up people's funds so that you know that more assets route through their router or something like that. And then the third type of bridge is kind of this externally verified bridge. And that's kind of what I was talking about with, you know, it could be a future direction of Hop. But ultimately it introduces this, it introduces a new trust model. And with Hop, you know, for going across layer twos, we want to just rely on Ethereum's trust model and see that as kind of the best way to scale, in the near term. But then for kind of addressing, you know, disjointed layer ones, that's something that's better suited for hash time locks or for these externally verified bridges.
Very cool. Let's talk about the organization behind Hop Protocol. How is the protocol actually, who are the people around Hop Protocol and how did they become organized?
Mm-hmm. So we launched Hop towards the beginning of the year. And since then we've kind of had this community grow. And then, you know, we have a company that kind of facilitates the development of the protocol. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so you know, as we move forward, we're going to be kind of becoming more and more community oriented. And we're already starting to see, you know, community members that have developed like analytic dashboards or like Twitter bots and stuff like that, which has been really cool to see.
Is there an actual formal Hop DAO?
There's not.
Will there be?
There could be.
There could be. Is there a Hop token?
There's not.
Will there be?
There could be.
Okay. Awesome. Well, okay. What if I don't know if there is an official Hop roadmap, but what is left on the roadmap?
So there's a lot. So right now we kind of have the first version of our bridge. The next version of the bridge is very similar, but enables multiple bonders for an asset. And so we're excited about that. And it also allows us to kind of consolidate like-kind assets. So right now we have a separate bridge for, you know, each of our stable coins. In the next version, we're going to be able to kind of have like a single stable coin bridge, which is going to be much, much more efficient. And like I said, you know, it scales up really well. So it should allow us to drop the fees by a good amount. And then, you know, we want to head to, you know, we're heading in a direction where we're making kind of this like core messaging protocol more generalized, and that's going to enable some really cool stuff in the future. And then beyond that, we want to address the disjointed layer ones, and you know that's going to be a big R&D effort to kind of figure out, you know, what's the best way to do this in a really decentralized way, even if we can't, you know, leverage the security of Ethereum for other disjointed layer ones.
Okay. Well, Chris, thank you for having extremely like powerful and concise answers. And so I think that's everything that I need to know about Hop. Is there anything that I missed or forgot to ask?
I think that's it. You know, we're really excited about the way, you know, everything's going. We're really excited about the way Ethereum's going and to, you know, we've been waiting for layer two for so long. So it's been awesome to see that it's like actually here and it's usable. And that we're seeing more and more layer twos kind of come online and get traction. And yeah, if you want to try the protocol, I'd recommend visiting hop.exchange or follow us on Twitter at Hop Protocol. And yeah, really appreciate you having me on the show.
Chris, before you go, outside of Hop, when you are done with work, done with developing, what else about Ethereum excites you or do you pay attention to?
Ooh, that's a good question. I mean, that's a hard question. I you know, dive into DeFi all the time. Like that's been super fun. Like oftentimes like my entire Saturday is eaten up by just, you know, making, you know, jumping around these different protocols, trying out new stuff. I admittedly missed, I think, a lot of the NFT craze. It's been so awesome to see like how mainstream it's gone. And like, I, you know, was so kind of had my head in DeFi that I really just didn't see it going the way it did. And I see your poster behind you. I know that you guys have been big believers in it. So it's been awesome to see it. But I have been following closely, but not too involved on the NFT side of things. And then, you know, DAOs have been a huge interest for a long time. So like just seeing, you know, Moloch kind of kick things off, and then Uniswap and Compound really start the protocol of DAOs has been awesome to see. Excited to see more and more people like working for DAOs and having that be like a legitimized type of organization.
100%. It's funny that you think I'm an NFT person, because I definitely like align myself as a DeFi person. And it's like, it's also funny to see like all the DeFi people, like not really be, there's a separation between the DeFi people and the NFT people out there.
Yeah. And like, it's so cool. Like the NFT communities are really taking off, and it's just like, it's so hard to keep up with everything these days. Like it really is crazy how far it's come.
Is there room in the Hop protocol for cross L2 NFT transfers, or is Hop kind of only for fungible tokens?
Absolutely. Vitalik put out a paper about a month ago for a cross-chain NFT bridge. And we think that the messaging piece of Hop protocol is very well suited to kind of facilitate this type of NFT bridge. And so like, actually he doesn't talk too much about how that communication would work in there. And so like, we see this as kind of a missing component and would love to kind of implement that in the future.
Well, there's a lot of things to be optimistic about with the future of Hop protocol. So Chris, thank you for coming on and telling us all about it.
Thanks, David. Really appreciate it.
So I think you mentioned this, but just to reiterate, what do you want listeners to do? Go try out Hop Exchange, follow Hop on Twitter, join the Discord. What else?
Yeah, jump in the community. We're always at Discord. So if you're looking for something to help, just start chatting and we'd love to find something. Follow us on Twitter and get your assets on layer two. There's real stuff happening and it's a lot cheaper than layer one.
Very cool. Well, all of those links will be in the show notes if listeners want to hop into Hop Protocol. Chris, thank you for joining me.
Thanks, David.
Cheers.
Hey, we hope you enjoyed the video. If you did, head over to Bankless HQ right now to develop your crypto investing skills and learn how to free yourself from banks and gain your financial independence. We recommend joining our daily newsletter, podcast, and community as a Bankless Premium subscriber to get the most out of your Bankless experience. You'll get access to our market analysis, our alpha leaks, and exclusive content, and even the Bankless token for airdrops, raffles, and unlocks. If you're interested in crypto, the Bankless community is where you want to be. Click the link in the description to become a Bankless Premium subscriber today. Also, don't forget to subscribe to the channel for in-depth interviews with industry leaders, Ask Me Anythings, and weekly roll-ups where we summarize the week in crypto and other fantastic content. Thanks everyone for watching and being on the journey as we build out the Bankless Nation.